We're heading into the 2020 election cycle and starting to get more and more information about people running for Senate in North Carolina, people running for president, of course, nationally. A lot of buzz this week, at least, about Howard Schultz, Starbucks CEO, putting out feelers about running as an independent, although a lot of that buzz has been negative since he made that first announcement. Where do things stand with regard to the presidential race, with regard to the Senate race in North Carolina? For that, we are joined by Tom Jensen, Director of Public Policy Polling. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website. Find them on Twitter at PPPpolls. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So let's start with the presidential race and work our way down. We've talked about a lot of the Democratic candidates and where they stand vis-a-vis Donald Trump. But this week, we started to get the word that Howard Schultz was thinking about running as an independent. And I've got to say, I didn't really know the name Howard Schultz until this week. So pretty much all I know about Howard Schultz from my Facebook feed is a lot of people don't want him to run for president. But where does he stand in terms of his chances of kind of making an impact in this race, at least?
Well, I think something that's a very interesting sort of precursor of the Howard Schultz campaign happened in the Kansas gubernatorial race last fall. I know it's unusual to take national harbingers from Kansas gubernatorial races, but that was a race where you had somebody running in a very similar mold to Howard Schultz. Greg Orman was an independent, sort of running the Pox on Both Houses campaign, the I'm a Very Serious Businessman sort of campaign. And there was, I think, broad assumption that having this sort of centrist independent in the race was going to keep the Democratic candidate for governor from being able to win. Democrats had sort of just a normal, calm nominee for governor, Laura Kelly, and then Republicans had a very extremist conservative candidate for governor, Chris Kobach, who had become very famous nationally for sort of out there screeds about voter fraud and that kind of thing. And everybody thought, oh, you know, Greg Orman being in there is going to throw Chris Kobach the race, even though people don't like him. And what ended up happening was that Democrats were so concerned about Kobach winning that even though Orman, the independent, had been the de facto Democratic candidate for Senate in 2014 and gotten 43% of the vote, almost all of it from Democrats, last year he got almost nothing. And Laura Kelly, the Democrat, got elected governor of Kansas, even with this other independent candidate sort of defraying support from her. And I think the broader implications there are that Democrats in this political climate are not messing around. They see sort of what the greater evil is in Trump, just as Kansas Democrats specifically saw what the greater evil was in Kobach, and they did not give the independent candidate any support, even after they had been willing to give that same independent candidate a huge amount of support 4 years earlier. So I think Schultz is going to find, even though there's all this concern this week that he may hurt the Democratic nominee next year, I think he's going to end up finding that Democrats are not playing around this time and that there's almost no receptiveness from people who would otherwise vote Democratic to this message. And you know, he may end up setting a record if he actually goes through with this for the most dollars spent per vote of any candidate in U.S. history.
So Howard Schultz, in one of his statements earlier this week, said, well, there's clearly a groundswell of support for an independent candidate, or Americans are starving for an independent candidate because the number of independents is on the rise. Fewer and fewer people are registering for this or that political party, and the number of independents is going up. And that's true. We talked about that. But that also kind of implies that, I mean, the argument kind of implies that, well, they're not siding with the Democrats or the Republicans because they're in the middle, they're centrist, and they don't lean one way or the other. But I know we've talked about this too, and a lot of people who declare themselves to be an independent or they don't endorse one party or the other do lean one way or the other, and they don't necessarily want centrists. They're just not signing up for one or the other party for some other reason. So where do independents stand generally? How many of them are left-leaning? How many of them are right-leaning? And how many of them are, as Howard Schultz says, right in the center and not endorsing either party?
I'd say it's about a third, and a third in each of those camps. A lot of people who register unaffiliated are folks on the left who are unhappy that the Democratic Party is not liberal enough. A lot of them are folks on the right who are unhappy that the Republican Party is not conservative enough. And we especially see this huge increase in young people registering unaffiliated, but it certainly doesn't mean that what young people are looking for is sort of wealthy favoring centrism that Schultz is bringing to the table. So I think Schultz's advisors have him convinced that what all these independents are looking for is someone who's right down the middle, and that the American people are really crying out for that. I think it's more likely that out of that 40% or so of people who maybe say they don't identify with either party, that maybe a quarter or a third of those are actually like true centrist types. That gets you to about 10 to 13% of the overall electorate. And, you know, that's assuming that everybody in that 10 to 13% wants to throw away their vote on somebody who doesn't have a chance of being elected president. That's not very likely either. We've only seen one poll involving Schultz that's come out so far, but it was sort of interesting. It was a poll from his own campaign. And the question was that they were pushing out was, do you support Donald Trump? Do you support Elizabeth Warren, who arguably is maybe one of the more controversial Democratic candidates, or polarizing anyway? Or would you support a centrist independent, just, you know, centrist independent Jesus, nothing beyond that, just a centrist independent? And even in that matchup where the centrist independent could be anybody in the world, the centrist independent still finishes third, you know, somewhat competitive in the 20s against Trump and Warren. But even sort of centrist baby Jesus is in third place. So I think that shows the lack of appetite for this. But I also don't know that Democrats need to be as freaked out about this as we've seen over the last week, because what I think is really interesting about Schultz's launch is he's spending most of his energy criticizing Democrats, and thus most of the people I see praising him are people who would otherwise vote Republican. So I don't know that that means that he actually helps Democrats, but I think ultimately what would happen if he ran is that he would be quite inconsequential, get 2-3% of the vote, and by the time you're getting 2-3% of the vote, you're not really you're not really hurting one side or the other. You're just kind of irrelevant.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is the website. So with all of that in mind, let's go down to the U.S. Senate race in North Carolina, because we're starting to get more and more information about who is running for Senate, who might be running for Senate, who might not be running for Senate. What are you seeing in terms of numbers, whose campaigns might be getting more traction than others?
Well, I think the key thing just to remember with the U.S. Senate race is that Tom Tillis is unpopular. 31% of voters approve the job he's doing, 37% disapprove. And because of that, we're seeing interest from a lot of different Democrats in getting into this race, because it is a race that certainly is not going to be easy by any means, but it is one that is very winnable for Democrats. So we've already seen two serious Democratic candidates get into the race over the last couple weeks. Trevor Fuller, who's the chair of the Mecklenburg County Commissioners, has gotten in. Senator Erica Smith, who's represented a district in eastern North Carolina and has an interesting biography, has gotten in. So I think that's sort of just the start of it, though. National Democrats are still looking for more of a sort of well-known name candidate to get into the race, even though he certainly made it clear that he plans to run for attorney general re-election. I think there's still interest in trying to get Josh Stein in there. I think there's interest, the Charlotte Observer's reported there's interest in getting former Charlotte mayor and Obama administration Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox in there. State Senator Jeff Jackson from Mecklenburg County, Chapel Hill native, has shown an ability to create a very strong social media presence, and he has some interest in getting in there. And then Deborah Ross, who was the candidate 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, is also interested in running again. And I think her story is really pretty relevant. She basically ran equal with how Hillary Clinton ran in the state. And I think what that speaks to is, with the level of polarization we've reached in North Carolina, the way that we vote for president probably pretty much is the way that we're going to vote for the Senate. No matter who Democrats end up putting forth, that person is likely going to have their performance track very closely with how the Democrat does for president. And I think what we know about the presidential race in North Carolina is the Democrat might win or the Republican might win, but it's unlikely to be decided by more than about a couple points one way or the other. That's sort of just what we've become as such a highly competitive presidential state. So I really think, you know, if Trump loses North Carolina, there's a good chance Tillis is going to lose too, and certainly Trump's not in great shape right now. So it's not surprising that a lot of Democrats want this opportunity, because it is good timing to be challenging a Republican senator.
And that was going to be my next question. Do you see any really plausible scenario where one party wins the presidency and the other party wins the Senate seat in North Carolina?
The only way we're going to have a split between how people vote for president and how people vote for Senate in North Carolina is if, like, Democrats win president by one and Republicans win Senate by one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not going to be a world where one party or the other wins the presidential race by four and the other party wins the Senate race. It's just a very interesting example sort of of how nationalized things have gotten in the state, where you can see these big differences. Like, even just going back to 2008, Kay Hagan won the Senate race by 9 points, while Barack Obama was only winning the state by about 1 point. Kay Hagan significantly outperformed the rest of the ticket, but I think that it's getting harder and harder to sort of differentiate yourself, because voters in North Carolina just aren't splitting their tickets very much anymore. Pretty much, if you're voting Democratic for president, you're going to vote Democratic on down the line. If you're voting Republican for president, you're going to vote Republican on down the line. That's very different than what we've historically had in North Carolina, where tons of people voted for a mixture of Democrats and Republicans. But in the time of Trump, in this polarized climate, it's pretty much you're falling in line one way or the other.
I know this doesn't have anything to do with the presidential or the Senate race, but that underscores how big of a deal gerrymandering is and has been in North Carolina, because we've seen this over and over again. If it's a good year for Democrats, then Democrats win all of the state level races in North Carolina. If it's a good year for Republicans, Republicans win all the state level races. But regardless of what year it is, it's a 10-3 Republican advantage in the House of Representatives.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we had a fair map sort of redistricting plan, I think we'd be going back and forth between a delegation that's somewhere in between 8-5 Republican and 8-5 Democratic in the House. You would have a delegation that's much more evenly split, and there would be much more of an ability for it to sort of swing one way or the other, because you make a good point that for the most part, depending on which party's having a good year, that party will win almost all the statewide races. I think one place where you see that exemplified in a particularly interesting manner is the judicial races and how those went in 2016 and 2018. Those are races where voters really don't know anything about the individual candidates, so they are pretty much just voting party. And in 2016, Republicans won pretty much all of those, 51-49 every single time. And then 2018, a huge year for Democrats, and Democrats sweep those statewide judicial races. But even with Democrats sweeping those statewide judicial races in a great Democratic year nationally, they still only won most of those, about 51-49. Mm-hmm. So we are just on such a sort of just hanging by a thread in each individual election between things going strongly Republican in the state or things going strongly Democratic in terms of who the winners and the losers are, even if there's not much of a difference in terms of where voters actually are on their opinions.
PublicPolicyPolling.com is the website. For more numbers, find them on social media, on Twitter, at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.